Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
And here we are Thursday morning, August 6th, joined for the fourth day this week by Dr. Fred Lopez at this time. And tomorrow we'll be joined on the fifth day of the week. Dr. Fred joins us every day. Highs of 96 today, a 30% chance for showers. Dr. Fred, good morning. And we just spoke to Art Kaplan. You may know of him, a medical ethicist, rather, at the Langone Medical Center about testing and when it vaccine testing. And it seems to me kind of odd that we won't purposely infect somebody with the vaccine to test it, but yet we'll send them out and hope that they get it, right? Because that's the only way that we can test it. And I'm not trying to be silly about this. It just seems odd.
Yeah, I heard a little bit of the segment, and these vaccine challenges that you and Dr. Kaplan spoke about are being discussed, this idea that individuals who have been vaccinated should be challenged with the infection directly and watched and to see how they do. Do they get the infection? If they get the infection, do they develop fewer complications or no complications to determine the efficacy of that vaccine? And so these vaccine challenges are being discussed. They're not done routinely in this setting yet. I think one of the issues that is different than other scenarios where these vaccine challenges have been done, where people are infected who've been vaccinated and then observed to see how they fare, is that we don't really have a great treatment for these individuals if they were to develop infection and complications. And so that is a difference in terms of determining whether one would undergo these challenges. But the idea is exactly as you mentioned, that people are volunteering to get vaccinated. Would they volunteer to get infected and then observed very closely by healthcare providers to determine whether they would get infected or develop complications? So it's an interesting discussion, and certainly is one that's heightened, if you will, in terms of COVID-19, because we all would love to have something sooner rather than later to prevent COVID-19 from spreading all over.
Somebody just texted this in, and I think it's an excellent point that if you were to intentionally infect somebody, and the idea is you want them to get infected to check the efficacy of the vaccine, but then you're putting somebody that got the placebo at risk of getting it without, as you just said, a really substantial treatment for it, well, then you would really not need a placebo group, would you, if you knew what you were exposing? Go ahead.
Right. I mean, these vaccine challenges would be with people who had been vaccinated and then challenged directly by the virus. The phase three trials that we've discussed that are currently ongoing in the United States and elsewhere, where they do have half of the individuals getting vaccine and half getting placebo, and then determining how many of them get infected or not. We do have a placebo group. These vaccine challenge trials that we're talking about, where somebody gets vaccinated, volunteers to get infected, and then followed, those would be people who had been vaccinated. So that would be the difference in terms of how those study groups are set up.
Somebody texted in, doctor, and said, why are people not talking about how the homeless population has been affected by this virus? Well, to 0425, last four digits, we are right now. Where does that fit in all of this, Doc, the homeless population?
Well, it's a susceptible group, just like every group is. And they can certainly congregate. And if one individual who's homeless is infected and is with a group of others in a very contained area, coughing, sneezing, within 6 feet for more than 15 minutes, you can see how transmission would be very effective in a setting like that. And so it's an excellent point to bring up that groups in congregate settings are going to be more susceptible to the transmission because by physical distancing not really always being practiced, their ability to pass the infection from one to another is increased.
All right, we take a break. 7:20 now. If you have any questions or comments about the novel coronavirus, COVID-19, numbers, testing, etc., you can text them to the Mortgage Financial phone and text line at 504-260-1870, and I'll pass them along to Dr. Fred Lopez when we come back. It's time for traffic now on WWL. 7:24 now, Tommy Tucker talking to Dr. Fred Lopez, professor of medicine in the section of infectious diseases at LSU Health New Orleans, as we do every day at this time to answer your coronavirus questions that you can text in to the Mortgage Financial phone and text line at 504-260-1870. So, Dr. Fred, I'm not trying to make this political at all, but the president yesterday that said that kids are virtually immune and they need to get back to school. Facebook didn't cotton to that. They took it down as a false claim. When it comes to kids and schools, and we're going to talk about, a lot about that later on this morning, let's start at the very beginning. Can children catch COVID-19? Doctor?
Yes, they definitely can catch COVID-19. And the question is, do they transmit it as effectively as other individuals? It does appear in some studies that perhaps children younger than 10 years of age don't transmit it as effectively. Children older than 10 do transmit it as effectively as adults. But they can catch it and they can transmit it.
In terms of what happens to them when they get it, is there enough information to show, generally speaking, what happens to a child if they get it?
Yeah, so in general, children have less complications from COVID-19 infections than older individuals, in part because they don't have comorbidities and make them and are, as such, aren't as vulnerable to the complications of COVID-19. So they don't suffer from death and hospitalizations and other complications nearly with the frequency that adults do, particularly older adults. But they can get infected, and again, they can transmit it to other people who are vulnerable, who are older, who have underlying chronic medical conditions that may put them at risk for more severe complications.
Somebody texted in and asked me to ask you about a new drug called leronlimab, something used in hospitals in New York, administered via injection. Do you know anything of that?
Leronlimab, I don't know what the generic name is for that drug, but there are many drugs that are being looked at for COVID-19. Many of them are anti-inflammatory drugs, hoping to address the robust immune response that some individuals who suffer from more severe complications of COVID-19 might benefit from. So those drugs are being looked at. And we're also looking at a lot of candidates that might have antiviral activity against the virus, kind of like remdesivir, which is being used for patients and which does appear to show a decrease in the recovery time of individuals who are infected with COVID-19, but doesn't really appear to have survival benefits. As we've mentioned a couple of times, that the drug that does appear to improve survival is dexamethasone, a steroid that does, again, direct its activity against the immune response and has anti-inflammatory activities that do improve survival in patients infected with COVID-19 who require oxygen or mechanical ventilation.
Let me clean this up. Somebody texted, and to be accurate, the president said children are virtually immune. You can parse words however you want, but I think the intent was that children are not are immune from it. But anyway, somebody else texted in here and said, what about ACE2 inhibitors? Have they been proven to be effective at blocking the virus? That is way above my pay grade. I hope you know what that means. I'm sure you do, but...
Well, the ACE receptor is the receptor to which the virus that causes COVID-19 binds to get into the body. That receptor is located in membranes in the nose, in the mouth, and in the eyes. And again, that's how the virus enters the body. And so there was some concern early on that people who were taking ACE inhibitors, these are drugs that are used, for example, for blood pressure control, that perhaps they were, at increased risk for infection and or poor outcomes because these drugs might increase the number of those receptors. That really hasn't turned out to be the case. And in fact, there are some studies that might even suggest that there might be benefits. But nobody really knows the exact effects of these drugs on the outcome of COVID-19, except to say that if you are on an ACE inhibitor for blood pressure control, for example, that you shouldn't stop them because of the concern of its effects on COVID-19. And I believe that may be what the listener was alluding to. But there's no reports that show definitively benefits or poorer outcomes from using these drugs.
Thank you, Doctor. I appreciate your time as always. Dr. Fred Lopez, Professor of Medicine, Section of Infectious Diseases at LSU Health New Orleans. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Somebody texted in and said it's only a matter of time before...
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.